Hello, everyone. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for coming on early. If you can let people in, that would be great. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and this is Thursday, August 4th, 2022. Delighted to see you all joining us here for our first Thursday of the month. It's basically a meditation time. We've called it a satsang, which means a gathering of truth or a gathering of those who are on the spiritual path in the Sangha or community of spiritual seekers. And it's just us vegans here, which is great. And I want to thank all of you for your efforts, because I know that it's a really challenging time to be here on this earth. And I want to just give us this opportunity, this hour, to focus more on the deeper dimension of our life and the deeper dimension of our what our culture is going through, and we can talk about some of those things perhaps. But the third Thursday, I always have to say that at the beginning, is where we really focus more on the nitty-gritty of things, and this is more focused on the spiritual dimension. Veganism is essentially a spiritual practice, and spirituality and veganism are completely one. They're unified. And as we awaken spiritually, we see that we're all interconnected, and if I hurt another, I'm hurting myself. So this is the thing that I think is really important to always bear in mind, that we're on a spiritual path. We're drawn toward veganism, and as vegans, we should be drawn toward spiritual awakening as well. So I'd like to, in the very beginning, go ahead and just do our meditation time. So I'm sitting here at the piano in the living room, looking out over our mountains and lake and everything here, and I'll go ahead and be playing the piano and speaking, and then we'll go ahead and open it up to some conversation, and then you can press *6 to unmute if you have a question or something you'd like to say as part of our time together. So this is really great. This is the opportunity we have to interact and try to remember, I think, the bigger picture, the deeper truths underlying the apparent chaos in the outer world. Everything will pass, for sure. All right. So we'll begin our meditation time. Feel free to either have your camera on or off, and I'll have mine on here for this. Okay. So let's begin our time of meditation together. Just taking a nice exhalation together. Breathing out. And releasing any tension or worry or any stress, any illusion of being a fundamentally separate self, and opening our hearts to the truth that what we are is infinite and eternal consciousness. Operating through this physical appearance, like all manifestations of life on this earth. So we breathe together in this present moment, giving thanks for this moment. Giving thanks, knowing that every experience we have had in this lifetime and all lifetimes has brought us to this point right here. Knowing that the present moment is always a mirror a precious reflection of our consciousness, giving us continually opportunities to awaken, to learn, to grow, and to contribute, to understand more deeply, to question, to love and serve, to be a force for healing, to awaken to the creative power that sings in every cell of our being, in the cell of every being. Breathing together, sharing not only time, but the energy of infinite life, the energy and truth of the boundless light that streams through every cell of our being, that streams from the sun, from all the stars, from the central sun that gives rise to manifestations throughout the infinite universes. We give thanks for this beautiful earth, for our short time here, for this opportunity to connect with the other fellow pilgrims on this path. We give thanks for all the beauty we see around us in the flowers and trees, in the mountains and rivers, in the lakes and streams, in the oceans and islands, in the wind, in the jungles, in the frozen polar regions, and all the animals the whole infinite variety of life forms, all with their perfect place, their niche and their purpose. They are all loved by the infinite love, source of all life. And so we allow our hearts now to fill with this great love, the love for all creation, for all beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings within our consciousness be free from suffering. And may they be at peace. May we realize the truth of all appearances. May we be a source of liberation for others and for ourselves. And so now we just open the very top of our head to the light that shines at the heart of the universe, and allow this light to stream down into our body, into our head, and from our head down through our eyes and ears and nose, mouth, neck, filling our entire head and neck and shoulders with light, washing away any fear, any blockages to the peace and truth, joy and freedom, awareness, bringing alignment to every aspect of our thoughts and words and deeds with our purpose. And feeling this light flow down through our shoulders, through our arms, hands, and streaming out through our fingers, and down through our upper chest and upper back, through all our internal organs, through our heart and lungs, down into our hips and pelvic area, and just washing away and harmonizing every aspect of our physical body and the entire body of our affairs, all of our actions and activities, all of our relationships, bringing to the light, into harmony with our purpose on this earth for this lifetime, opening our mind and heart to our intuitive wisdom, to our understanding of the bigger picture, and of our unique potential, our unique expression. And just feeling and seeing this light as it continues down through our legs, all the way down into our feet, and streaming out through our feet, abiding now as a being of light, a stream of living light, continually purifying, aligning, awakening, healing, connecting to the great joy of being. To the truth that shines always in our heart, in every cell of our being, in every cell on this earth. The unstoppable victory of the truth of love and peace is manifest now in our life, may all beings be free, letting go of the delusions of conditioned thinking, letting go of the craving for comfort. For approval. And as we come to the close of our meditation time, we join together in consciousness from the heart that is the one heart that we all share, invoking all of our loved ones and the whole human family and everyone who is especially aligned with the liberation of consciousness, breathing and radiating love in every direction, breathing and radiating compassion for all living beings, breathing and radiating joy, the great joy that shines always at the core of our being, and breathing and radiating peace, the peace of our true nature, seeing the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace, in the truth of harmony, of infinite wisdom and intelligence. Of radiant health and joy and creative, exuberant living. We give thanks for all of our teachers, for all of the teachings, for all of our loved ones, for all of the wisdom arising this day and every day, guiding us always to a higher unfoldment of our life for the benefit not only of ourselves and our loved ones, but for the benefit of all living beings. And we give thanks finally, knowing that we are part of the awakening of human consciousness on this earth, that we may become Homo Ahimsa, the being loving kindness. We give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Lisa, for helping out so much. Appreciate that. Okay, well, so I'm glad that we're able to join this way, as I said earlier. And what we often like to do before we just open it up is maybe have a little reading. Today is kind of a especially good one in this book we've been looking at, the Dhammapada, which is an old Buddhist book, one of the original texts. And this particular short chapter that I'd like to share with you, I think has so many jewels in it that it's really precious. It's one that's really probably the core teaching in many ways of the whole book. And the name of it is The Buddha. It's chapter 14. Buddha is a word, it comes from the Sanskrit word bodhi, or, well, B-U-D-H, bud, which means awake, to wake up. There's that old story of the Buddha when he was walking down the road and somebody saw him, and they looked at this guy and they thought, what is this? And so they said to him, are you a ghost? Are you a spirit? What are you? And he just said, I'm awake. And I think Thoreau has a line in Walden. If you haven't read Walden, I highly recommend reading it at some point. You know, Walden is one of the greatest works of English literature, especially American English literature. And at one point, Thoreau says, I've never met someone who was quite awake. If I did, how could I ever look him in the face? You know, and I think that's the fundamental truth, that we are born and we live our lives, and in a way the tragedy is we really do, most of us, the vast majority, don't really wake up too much. We are injured and wounded early on by the cultural programming, and that the blinders are slapped onto our face and onto our ears and onto our thinking. And they're so thick and so strong that we don't manage to get them off. And so we come back life after life. And that's really the goal, I think, in many ways, is to see. See clearly, hear clearly, know directly the true nature of who we are and what's going on here. It's not at all how it appears. And so that kind of understanding, I think, is really part of the vegan movement. It should be. Unfortunately, the vegan movement has been infiltrated by a lot of materialism, and which is understandable because our entire culture is pervaded by materialism, which is the opposite of spirituality. It's the belief, the false belief, in that matter is all there is, just this. And when we go down that road, which was what animal agriculture does, it forces us down that road. We just see cows and pigs and chickens as matter, right? I mean, there's nothing more demonic than that. Because when we see them merely as matter, sell them by the pound, then that justifies anything. You can stab them and mutilate them and anything. So we 10,000 years we've been doing that. And so we see ourselves that way, as you've heard me say. So we need to really wake up out of this and see every being not as a matter, ever. See the being. And that means doing it with ourselves. And that won't happen, really, deeply, until we can stop thinking. And that's the difficulty, is our minds are propelled to continually think. And that thinking keeps the narrative of the toxic cultural program spinning in our head. So even when we go vegan, which is a great thing, we still have our mind thinking all the time, and the thinking reinforces me as a separate self and you as a separate self and everybody, and pretty soon I'm trying to manipulate. We can't get out of it. So we need to learn, and it's a practice to be aware without thinking. To be a look out of our eyes and just be and function from a deeper perspective than just being driven by the cultural program which comes through our thinking very often. So that's why it's so difficult, is because we have to really learn to work with our mind. And the mind is, in many ways, like an untamed monkey or elephant or something that just has a life of its own. They say in the Zen tradition, like an untamed ox. And And the whole idea is it's very hard to even find it. It's running around, and most of the time we can't even find our mind at all. It's just leading us around by the nose, more or less. So this is what's the practice is all about. It's questioning everything, not only in the outer world, but what our mind is teaching us or telling us about what's happening in the world. And that's why it's so precious to have other people who are on the path of veganism and also on the path of spiritual awakening who understand this, because it's not that many. I mean, most of the people are either one or the other, right? They're either vegans, but they're lost in materialism and in the cultural program of separation and competition and judging and blaming and criticizing and all just ridiculous material fear. Or they're on a so-called spiritual path, but they're eating animals, and they're part of the whole delusion of violence, and they think, well, I bless the animals, so it's okay before I eat them. So it's really quite a situation we find ourselves in here. And it's serious, because there's these two factors going hand in hand. One of them, I guess you could say, is evil, or the forces that we can see playing out of domination and exploitation of animals and human beings coming through the governments, through the media, through corporations and financial institutions, through education, just enslaving humanity. So there's that. But then that wouldn't happen if people would be aware. But that's the other problem, is unawareness. And so the two feed each other. The unawareness, or another word for it, I guess, which is not so complimentary, but it's pretty true, really, is stupidity. I mean, unfortunately, people, our wisdom is taken away from the time we're little kids. So it's about regaining our wisdom. And when that happens, the outer world changes. The leaders who are dominating, exploiting us and animals and ecosystems, we wouldn't tolerate it. It wouldn't happen. But when we are programmed to eat animal foods, to shut down our wisdom, to desensitize ourselves to the suffering of others, we're asleep and we cause this violence. We allow this violence. We allow ourselves to be dominated. So it's these two things. It's evil and stupidity, basically. And they feed each other. So the whole idea is for us in our own lives to be aware. And I don't like the word evil that much, but the idea is to practice loving kindness and compassion, connectedness and caring, not only for people but for all beings. Okay, so that's kind of what Buddha, the idea of Buddha is this awakening. So this is what the text says, which I think is very relevant. And we could spend a lot of time. This is really a foundational text, but we'll go through it hopefully relatively quickly. So it goes like this. The Buddha's victory cannot be undone. I mean, right there, it's like, wow. The Buddha's victory can never be undone. So this is a beautiful thing. Once we wake up, we can't go back to sleep. Once you understand, that's a beautiful thing. That's why I always say, people who say they were vegan, and that then, well, I'm not vegan anymore. You were never vegan if you go away, right? I mean, once you understand it, it's not an option. It's the same thing. The Buddha's victory cannot be undone. No one in the world can approach it. By what path would you guide him who has no path, whose field is endless? I mean, this is so profound, but the idea is that truth is pathless. This is something that Krishnamurti talked about, and I think it's a very important point that we're always looking for a path. We're always looking for some kind of limitation, some kind of, tell me the answer to the story. And actually, it's bigger than that. It's bigger than any of our concepts or any particular limitation that we're going to put on it. So this victory, so-called victory, is even beyond victory. It's just actually coming home to our true nature that we never actually left. We've never left. We just think we did. And that's the beautiful thing, is we don't have to become other than what we are. We just have to that's the calling. We're called to realize our true nature. The Buddha has no ensnaring, embroiling craving to lead him. aren't those great words? Ensnaring, embroiling, craving to lead him. By what path would you guide him who has no path, whose field is endless? There's that old saying by Rumi, you know, beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. You know, that idea that, you know, we get caught in dualisms, but actually our true nature, when it's allowed to function, it's naturally kind and loving and benevolent. That's our true nature. And so it's this craving for comfort, the craving to have what I want, how I want it, that keeps us always out of harmony and in a certain prison, in a sense. Even the gods envy the awakened ones, the mindful ones, the wise ones, who are intent on meditation and delight in the peace of renunciation. So that, again, this is the idea in the Buddhist tradition, is that it's better to be born as a human being than to be born as a god. Because the idea is that there's many realms, right? And there's realms, there's really high divine Devic realms where you're always in joy and happiness. It's kind of an easy life. And there's also realms that there's a lot of suffering. But the idea is that the human realm is sort of in between. And there's comfort, potentially, and there's suffering. There's all of both, everything. So because of that, we don't get too comfortable. And we're kind of propelled by the problems that we have to ask questions and to grow spiritually. So they say it's the best thing to be born as a human. And so here the Buddha says, even the gods envy the awakened ones. Because even gods are still subject to delusion. But being mindful, again, that idea of being conscious and aware and present in this moment brings delight in the peace of renunciation. Again, I mean, I hate to go too quickly here, but the peace of renunciation. Think about what that means. The peace of renunciation. Renunciation has kind of a harsh feeling to it in a way. It's like you have to renounce the world or renounce, you know, we think, no, I don't want to renounce. I mean, I like good food and this, and, you know, and a nice warm shower and all these things we want to have. I don't want to renounce all that. But it, really, quite honestly, what can I say about this? We are programmed to really crave comfort in a way that imprisons us. And I think we have to understand that what the materialist society offers us is convenience and comfort and safety, right? And we give up our freedom and our aliveness in order to be safe and comfortable. And we become imprisoned and we lose our freedom and our life and our sovereignty. So what this is talking about is sovereignty, in the spiritual sovereignty, in the sense of, can we be at peace and happy no matter what? If we don't have a warm shower, if we don't have central heating and refrigerator and all the things we think we need to have to be comfortable. It's so interesting because we think back, this is written 2,500 years ago, and we think back then people must have been really unhappy. I mean, they couldn't drive anywhere, they couldn't fly anywhere, they couldn't get on the phone, they didn't have hot and cold running water. I mean, you know, and yet you see that there's an enormous happiness that we can't even begin to comprehend, probably, most people in our society today. So material progress, in many ways, is really not necessarily progress, right? I coined a word, gress, just gress, right? Some people say, you know, are we progressing or regressing or transgressing? You know, I don't know. We're just gressing. We're just gressing along. You know, I don't know if it's forward or backward or up or down or beyond or whatever. You know, the propaganda is we're making progress, right? Really? Is this really progress now that we have all these drugs and nuclear weapons and whatever? So the whole idea is, again, question all the narratives. And this comes back to what he's saying, be mindful. Maybe, you know, I think this one is so good, I won't try to do the whole thing because it's just, it would be a shame. You know, I'll finish it up next time, I think. We still have a few more minutes. I'll do a few more of these. It is difficult. Yeah, this is another core teaching. It is difficult to be born a human. So there's two ways of saying that, of seeing this. It's difficult to be born a human. Either it's very rare to be born as a human. It's a very precious opportunity. Then he says also, but then he says the next thing is, difficult is the life of mortals. It is difficult to hear the true Dharma. Difficult is the arising of Buddhas. So there's quite a few ideas here, but the basic idea is human life is precious. It's not easy to attain a human life, especially a human life with a good, healthy physical body where you have the capacity to hear the spiritual teachings and understand them. According to the Tibetan Buddhists, they say that is so rare that you know, they have all these similes that are amazing. You know, I mean, like there's a turtle swimming in a vast ocean, comes up every 1,000 years, and when his head comes through this donut-shaped thing, that's how rare it is. You know, the idea is very rare, so don't fritter it. You know, that idea. But also, he says it's difficult, the life of mortals, because there's challenges. You can't escape the challenges. You can't escape knowing you're going to die, right? Number one, that's the first thing. You know you're going to die. You know you're going to die, right? That's the one thing that's unavoidable. So that should bring into stark relief everything else. Okay, then how do I live? Knowing I'm going to die, knowing that that's absolutely unavoidable, that's, in a way, if we're asleep, that's suffering. That's like, oh no, I got to do something. I got to make something. I got to have a legacy. I got to have children. I got to make money. I got to have pleasure. It creates craziness, you know. And we're afraid of it, right? We're always afraid of the one thing that's good, definitely going to happen. You know, it's like so the whole idea is that's the difficulty. So, but that's the great thing. Then that should cause to be born within us, light the fire, in a sense, of mindfulness, of awareness, of curiosity. And looking to see, well, what have people actually been able to understand at a deeper level, the truth of being. Difficult to hear the true Dharma. That's another thing. You know, there's so many, I have to say it, people conveying false Dharma, you know, teachings that really, it's very dangerous now and very difficult. There's so much deception. It's rampant. We're told to be afraid. We're told to go after this and that. Even so many spiritual teachers, I would never want to listen to what they're saying for the most part because they don't include animals, for one thing, but very often they appeal to the human urge for either comfort or abundance or having more than others do or whatever. And these are very fleeting. You know, if we have the perspective of that point when we're leaving our body, then and look back on our life, and we'll see, you know, what was my life about? We review everything. You know, it's important to remember we're going to be reviewing everything, and it's not going to matter at that point if we won or lost that much. It's going to be how we played the game. So, difficult is the arising of Buddhas. That's an interesting one too. So why is it so difficult? It's the arising of Buddhas. Why is it so difficult? Because the mind, is in many ways churning all the time and the water, muddying the water. And when the water is muddy, we can't see clearly. Okay, then it goes on. Doing no evil, engaging in what is skillful, and purifying one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. Okay, so the idea here is, and you've maybe heard me talk about this before, that in the Buddhist tradition very often we don't use the word evil and good so much. It's more skillful and unskillful. That whatever is evil evil and good are moral distinctions, which can be helpful, but the whole idea is that what we see as evil is unskillful because it really creates suffering. And suffering is suffering, right, for oneself and for others. And if we cause suffering to others, rest assured we're going to experience it ourselves. And this idea that this is the only lifetime we have, and that is so ridiculous. And that really, I think, is a huge demonic kind of shutting down of wisdom, because it takes away people understanding that they are what makes this life, this physical body possible, and we're always going to have some kind of a vehicle. I mean, consciousness will. Well, and when this one goes, that's not the end of us, obviously. So we're going to manifest again. And time is an illusion, so you can't say, in a way, even past and future. But the basic idea is that we're consciousness. And so when we don't understand that, then we do things that are harmful, which is evil. We steal and kill and lie and abuse others. So the whole idea is when we see the true nature, we never want to do that. Like the golden rule, which is really the essence of all the world religions, it just keeps itself. When we understand who we are, we don't have to try to be good. We don't have to think about, well, I'm going to be good now. That's kind of artificial. We wouldn't want to hurt, it's not like I'm a vegan because I want to be good to animals. I mean, it would be painful to me to buy animal flesh, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, their suffering is my suffering. I can feel it. We don't want to engage in that. So it's just coming home. That's the beautiful thing. It's not like putting on some artificial outer hat, that's different. It's just coming home. Okay, I'm just going to do two more, and then we'll take a break. So the last two are, patient endurance is the supreme austerity. The Buddhas say that nirvana is supreme. One who injures others is no renunciate. One who harms another is no contemplative. That one, it's what we've been saying somewhat. One who harms or injures others, you're not renouncing the world then, right? You want to get something. You want to, you're not contemplating. You're not having a quiet mind. But this idea of patient endurance is the supreme austerity. The Buddhas say that nirvana is supreme. So nirvana, what is nirvana? It's kind of a strange word, nirvana, but in our society, it just simply means extinction, right? So it's the extinction of ignorance, basically. When ignorance ends, then the light is shining forever. And patient endurance is seen as the foundation of this. What is patient endurance? That's one of the key big ideas, actually, which is that we patience is considered, the more I can see this, the older I get, the more I see how real patience is not being patient. And we kind of laugh about that. Like, as soon as I feel like I'm being patient, then I'm probably pretty impatient. It's sort of like, as soon as I feel like I'm being pretty humble, then I'm probably not very humble. it's that sort of self-conscious idea that I'm being something. I'm being patient. I'm patiently waiting for somebody, then probably not patient. So real patience is actually being present with what is without trying to actually resist it in a certain way that we do when we're unhappy with it. So this is a complicated one in a way, because we, as people, we want to improve the world, we want to improve others, we want to improve ourselves especially. And patience has a certain sense of acceptance of how things are. And I think that's important. It's the foundation to see the bigger picture. Okay, the last, and we'll open it up now for comments and discussion. The last one is, not disparaging others, not causing injury, practicing restraint by the monastic rules, knowing moderation in food, dwelling in solitude, and pursuing the higher states of mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. So that's kind of a summary. Pursuing the higher states of mind, dwelling in solitude. Again, dwelling in solitude doesn't necessarily mean you have to be living alone in the mountains. It means the sense of solitude, symbolically, is when we are free from the craving to impress others or to change others. The idea is to just manifest the truth that we are as the one being, the unity of life, knowing moderation in food. And food, again, is not just physical food that we're eating, but it's all the inputs that we're seeking and engaging in. So it's good to kind of have that bigger picture. And pursuing the higher states of mind, that's the final thing I'll just emphasize, is that the comfort and pleasures and so forth that we tend to seek can keep us from higher states of mind, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, if I'm in a very low state of mind or fear or I'm wounded, I might really crave and get pleasure out of alcohol or drugs or certain kinds of strange behavior, sex or different things. And then, but as I grow in consciousness, the idea of engaging, I wouldn't find any pleasure in that, right? I mean, that like obviously takes it away. Or people who want to have a good steak or whatever. I mean, we can see how that's absolutely contrary to the higher joy. And so the underlying idea in this whole thing is that there's tremendous joy that is available to us, that is our true nature, that's not even separate, it's just who we are, but that we pretty much actively keep that out of our consciousness by our continual thinking and planning and complicated way of living, that we're always worried about what's going to happen, what should have happened, what they're going to do, what I hope they don't do, what I hope I don't do, what I should have done, what they should have done, you know, and this thing, it runs, and so the real joy of our being, it can't penetrate that. It's there, but we have a wall up. We have walls up. And again, it's not our fault. It's just the fact that we've been born into a society when, as soon as we were born, we were taken away from our mother, probably slapped around, injected with a bunch of toxic chemicals, and set into a sausage factory educational system that forced us into fear and trusting and trying to get approval by authorities. I mean, it's just an absolute violent way of living that we're born into. And so the fact that we're conscious enough to actually see that and talk about it and do our best to cleanse our consciousness of it, and, you know, is a beautiful thing. It shows that the power of us as individual expressions of life is stronger than any cultural programming. I mean, ultimately, that's the big question. I mean, I'll just close with this point, and then we open it up. There's a basic tension, right, in any society between the individual and the group, between the individual and the society. Like, I'm a product of my culture, my language, my aspirations, my thoughts and feelings, everything. It's programmed. So much of it's programmed. So the question comes up is, what is stronger, the society or the individual? Because in many ways, they're at odds. I mean, the individual wants to have freedom and grow and so forth, but we need society also, obviously. So my feeling is that always, ultimately, the individual is stronger, is the real power. The real power is in the individual, in the being. Organizations and groups and societies come and go, and they are in many ways a reflection of the individuals, and they impede on individuals. But the real power is in us, is in what we are. It's infinite power. Nothing can stop it. I remember Thoreau in Civil Disobedience, in that essay, he said, one person can stop the entire machine, the whole system. I think he's right. You know, one person. I mean, if one person's really connected. So I think it's really important to remember that we as individuals always have the power and ultimately will triumph in our awakening. That's the foundation of everything. So I'm not sure if this has been helpful, but I'll go ahead and I can see it's only a few minutes, 10 minutes. So does anyone have any thoughts or questions or comments or feelings you want to share about all this? Because we're living in unprecedented times and challenges, and monkeypox is on the way. So we have to keep our wits about us here, and in many ways, I think, be able to hold both of these realities, the non-dual awareness of that what we are was never born and will never die, and we don't have to attain or prove anything. But on the other hand, we are called to be a force for healing and awakening and shine the light here in this world as best we can. So I see a hand up. Yeah, press, go down to reactions at the bottom if you're on the Zoom, if you're not on the phone. If you're on the phone, *6. I think *6 or raise your hand. Angel, you have something you'd like to share?
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for this exquisite satsang. It's always such good, wonderful reminder, and thank you for the beautiful energy that you hold and emanate and share with your beautiful music. So first of all, just thank you. Secondly, I have a question for you, and I think that your response to this might be a benefit to my fellow vegan advocates on this call and those who listen to the recording. And my question is, on Monday, I'm going to be doing a podcast, a full hour, promoting the message of Ahimsa and vegan diet with Integral Yoga International. And I want to focus specifically on the vital importance of shifting from vegetarian to vegan. And so I'm just wondering if you could add any comments or insights about what you think are the most important key points and the most effective way of transmitting this message so that we can get the most far-reaching effective results in terms of vegan advocacy.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think, again, it's really important to emphasize, since this is the integral yoga, that the dairy industry and even any kind of dairy products are based on the exploitation of the sacred feminine dimension of life and of mothers' relationships with their babies, their offspring, and that this is one of the most egregious violations that we engage in as human beings in our world today. And when I went to India a couple of years ago and did a lot of lectures all over, from north and south and east and west, all over India, I had a chance to see with my own eyes the terrible suffering of cows. You know, you see cows horribly abused. I mean, they're starving. And just remember, you know, I think it's important for people, because a lot of people in the yoga, you know, they'll say, well, in the good old days in India, you know, the family just had a cow or two and it was part of the family and they had a little milk and everything was peaches and cream. it's not true. I mean, when you talk to one of these little families and who has one cow or two cows, a couple of cows, and you say, ask them two questions, ask them, what do you do with the male cows that are born? Because typically sometimes they would castrate them and use them to pull a plow, but they don't do that much anymore, and even that is somewhat exploitive, but for the most part, they kill them. Or if they don't kill them, they send them to off to market. You know, they say, well, they just give it to somebody, or they let them go. And you see these cows wandering, and they don't have any way to get food. They're just eating trash and plastic, and there's a lot of dogs, unfortunately, that just have nothing to eat either, and they attack the cows. And so it's pretty horrible. And the same thing with, you ask them, well, what do you do with the female cows that are giving you milk when their milk production declines? They don't keep them, because cows have to be continually impregnated over and over again to give milk. I mean, they'll dry up. And so they give babies, and there's always too many babies. That's the thing about dairy. I mean, from the logical point of view, you can tell them the thing. Also about the ahimsa milk, people in the Hare Krishna movement have been working on for a long time, and how they found out directly that it's unsustainable, that you can't have ahimsa milk because there's just too many calves to get born, and not enough of the cows are actually giving milk. So if you have, you know, the price of the ahimsa milk that they had an operation in West Virginia, and they had all this land, and they had a few cows, and they said, we're not going to have any suffering. It's going to all be ahimsa milk. And the price of the milk went higher and higher and higher and higher until it was really unaffordable because they had half the babies that are born are males, and so they had to feed them. So they needed more land to feed them. And then some of the females aren't old enough to give milk yet, so they got to feed them. And then the other ones eventually are too old. So they had, you know, they had like 150 cows, and they only had maybe, you know, 40 of them actually giving milk in there, and it gets worse and worse. And so then they started giving the cows away to the neighbors. The neighbors said, we'll take them, you know, don't worry, we won't hurt them, but, you know, they just ate the cows because the neighbors were farmers that ate cows. So you can't have dairy without killing. You cannot do it without killing the calves. You can't just feed that many calves and keep impregnating them. So there's always killing, and it's worse because you're stealing and killing, right? And there's so much suffering to these cows, and I've heard them. You know, maybe you've heard them too. You know, just in the middle of the night, you know, bellowing and calling for their babies. So the spirituality, in many ways, is really about honoring the sacred feminine dimension of consciousness within us, whether we're a man or a woman. It's the feminine dimension of consciousness that is receptive to the higher awareness. And dairy societies, you're killing that out. You're abusing that and exploiting that. And it's no accident, I would say, that the number one culture that is the most violent to women is India. I mean, it is the most violent. I mean, you go to Delhi or one of these places, I mean, there's more raping and killing of women than anywhere in the world is in these big cities in India, because dairy is so deeply rooted in the Indian culture. So it plays out in how the women are treated. You know, it's terrible. And so we have to understand that if we want to have a world of harmony between men and women, we can't have dairy. We can't have any animal agriculture. All animal agriculture is based on the domination of the females more than the males, and stealing their babies and killing them. It just destroys our feminine spiritual dimension. And there's no way around it. There's no way around it. You can't find a way around it. If you want to suck, I mean, it's perverse to take the, I mean, it's so perverse to take the milk of a being that is so different from us and feed it to our children or to ourselves. We don't have renin like they have to break it down. I mean, it's toxic. It's perverse. It's really, I mean, it shouldn't even be a question anymore. I mean, it should not even be an issue. It should be, it's so obvious to me. I mean, I think just, you know, tell it like it is. I would say, you know, because, it really is past time to wake up out of this dairy nightmare. You know, it really is. Anybody else? I think we're kind of getting to the end of our time, unfortunately. It's
thank you, Will.
You're most welcome. Thank you so much for being a voice for the animals and for spirituality, Angel. And your new book, The Solution, S-O-U-L-U-T-I-O-N, on Amazon, I want to recommend to everyone. It's a great overview of all these things, the environmental and the spiritual and so forth. And Angel is one of our facilitators. Thank you. Thanks, Angel. So anyone else have a quick question? I think we need to kind of begin to wrap it up. I've really kind of committed that we don't go longer than an hour for this because I know we all have...
Will, I have a quick request.
Susan, okay, yeah.
Hi. So we don't have time tonight, but I'm wondering if maybe in your next month or at your facilitators meeting, you could have a discussion about the intersectionality of animal ag, the collapse of the planet that we're experiencing, and that all connects also with materialism. I just feel like yeah. I'd like to, I'm just putting it out there, I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Animal agriculture and collapse of the planetary ecosystems, you mean, and materialism. Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, we could talk a long time about that. But, yeah, materialism is really the poison at the heart of all of this that animal agriculture enforces on us. And it's invisible. It's scientism, really. Scientism, like science, like every religion in many ways is precious because they all have, at their core, they have the golden rule. They have ethical teachings. Not to harm, don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself. But the religion of animal agriculture and the religion of our society is scientism. That's the religion. The guys in the white coats, they're the ones that tell what reality is, and there's no morality. There's no morality in science. None. In fact, it basically can be used to justify the strong dominating the weak. Easily, you can use scientism to say, "Well, we have natural selection," and scientism is the religion, and it's the religion of materialism, and it's demonic, and it's really, we have to see that clearly. It's taken over our society. It's what kids are taught as truth, and a lot of young vegans, unfortunately, have drunk that Kool-Aid, and they're infiltrating. They don't mean to be infiltrating toxicity into our movement, but they are. Unfortunately, they can't help it. It's like they've just been so wounded they can't help it. But yeah, that's a great topic. I mean, I'm actually writing a book right now. I'm working really hard on it. I'm hoping it'll come out in a month or two, and I'll give you all. But it's about all this actually. I was keeping it a secret, but now maybe I'll tell you. I'm pretty well almost getting finished with it. I only have a couple more chapters, so I don't have the title yet, so I can't tell you that, but it's coming. But anyway, so thank you, Susan. And I think I'm going to wrap it up here. Tammy, I'll let you say quickly, do you have something you want to say? I know we're kind of late, but it's great to have you with us. Northern Canada.
I just wanted to mention that Climate Healers is having a convergence this week, and in regards to what Susan had asked about the environment, and if COP10, which is in response to some of the stuff that isn't addressed around animal agriculture and the planet. So if you go into climatehealers.org, you'll see a link for VCOP, and it's Saturday and Sunday. We have a couple of really great a brand new documentary speaking of India. One of Silesh's brand new documentaries, Silesh and Dolly, is The Land of Ahimsa, and it's all about the dairy industry in India. So that will be featuring that and The End of Medicine, and then there will be a lot of really great speakers. So climatehealers.org, and then there's a little link for VCOP. So, yeah. Thank you.
Good. Okay, so well, let's have our closing. Everybody can you can all unmute your microphones. Madeline? Oh. Woo! She didn't hear me. Okay, so we'll go ahead and say our our Circles of Compassion Affirmative Prayer. Hi, Judy. Good to see you.
Well, hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Kenny, everybody. It's good to have you. Thanks again for joining us. Madeline. Oh, here she is. Finally, we're waiting for you.
Nice when somebody's waiting for me. Thank you.
Okay, so thanks everyone for joining us. Really appreciate it. And let's go ahead and say together our affirmative prayer. Compassion encircles the earth, all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the earth, for all beings
everywhere.
And one more time. Compassion encircles the earth.
For all beings everywhere.
Great. All right. Much love to you all. See you on Thursday, the third Thursday, the 18th, and have a great couple of weeks. Much love. Stay in touch. Thanks again.
Hi. Thanks, Will.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Thank Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Will.